This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Welcome to Crushed by Margaret Caborn Smith, a podcast about the highs and lows of unrequited love. My guest today is the wonderful stand-up podcaster and author of The Breakup Monologues, The Unexpected Joy of Heartbreak. It's Rosie Wilby.
Hello.
Rosie, welcome.
How lovely to be here.
Well, it's amazing to meet you, considering you are a self-described accidental relationship guru. This is what has become of your career, which must be weird.
Apparently so, because I started the Breakup Monologues podcast a few years ago. And yes, I've become a sort of unofficial relationship therapist. And I've even appeared in character as Dr. Love doing spoof couple counselling at various pop-up venues. And a lot of couples said that it was more helpful than their
real therapist. Oh my God, you see, comedy can heal.
It really can.
That's what we've learned.
That's my philosophy.
So do you remember your first ever crush? Well, I'd like to ask that, and then I'd like to ask, and was it sexual? Because I'm always just nosy about this
stuff. Yeah, sex is interesting, isn't it? I've been researching sex and been fascinated by it for many years. You know, I even managed to get my way into a sex party to perform a comedy set, purely for research purposes, of course.
Wow.
Which was a very interesting gig. Maybe more on that later. No crushes at the sex party, disappointingly.
No.
None of them turned up.
That it's all a bit
been...
real, isn't it?
It's a bit in your face.
Literally.
My first big crush that maybe we want to talk about in more detail is a woman called Kate that I had a crush on at university, in my first year at university back in the early 1990s. And I think that sort of set a template for me for unrequited love and crushes. And it's really an energy that I've harnessed and kept with me, because I have a philosophy that crushes can be really good for you. They can be a real driving force and a real motivation. Because what's more motivating than trying to do something, achieve something, get somewhere, achieve a goal that will make your crush, even if they don't have a relationship with you, because often that's not what you want anyway, it will make them notice you and know that you exist and see you in the world. And that is such a motivating goal. So I believe, even though I've just got married recently and I have a normal real life relationship with all the highs and lows of that, and my wife is wonderful, I still think it's perfectly healthy to have crushes alongside that.
Yeah, I mean, well, I obviously agree, I'm obsessed with them, but how does she, will she listen to this? How will she feel when she hears that this
well,
is your
philosophy?
Well,
I mean, on our very first date, I had to tell her what I was working on at the time, which was my first book, which was called Is Monogamy Dead?
That's a conversation starter, isn't it?
Yeah, it brings up an interesting conversation on your very first date. And I'd done this whole survey asking what counts as cheating, and people had very interesting responses to that. Sex counts, but somebody had just put in the comments, in a car. I don't know.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because I think in the Bible, maybe not the Bible, but in religion, there's definitely a whole no. If you even think about it, then that's cheating. And well, I actually think that some people do believe that.
Some couples would
be appalled.
About 7% of my survey respondents said that even thinking about somebody else counts as cheating. But my wife and I have had to have, healthy discussions about the fact that that's okay. And, we have a sexually exclusive relationship, even though in my younger years have gone off and, done research at sex parties and participated in sex lab experiments and done all kinds of weird and wonderful things for, to sort of gather material, really, and have funny stories to talk about in books and things. I do think that your fantasy world is yours. And it's, you can, I think, retain something of you that is really true and really intimate and really personal in your own fantasy world. And, the the woman that I sort of have had, I mean, it seems silly to call it a crush now because we sort of know each other and, you know, like each other as friends.
One.
Oh, no. Well, we are Facebook friends. I'm actually Facebook friends with most of my old crushes. So
that's nice.
It's all quite healthy, really. But, yeah, the woman I've sort of had a crush on in more recent years, you know, we do know each other and she's actually quite nice. And that, in a way, that's a bit disappointing because you sort of want them to be horrible and aloof and very distant.
Or stay perfect and amazing and just not know them enough to know whether they're nice or not. You can just sort of make up some wonderful personality for them. Yes. Quite nice is awful, actually, isn't it?
Well, no, that sounds really damning with
really
faint praise.
Does.
She's okay. I think it's sort of been a safer person to still have a crush on because she's not really a threat to my marriage or anything like that. I'm not actually going to go off and have an affair with her. Whereas I think when I had crushes at school, when I was a teenager in the 1980s, you know, having crushes on friends who or peers who were, I assume, heterosexual, and, you know, being gay was not talked about in the 1980s. It was a terrible old time. I know you've spoken to Chris Neal about sort of coming out and growing up gay. And, you know, at that time it was very much surrounded by secrecy and shame. So there might be the odd friend you would confide in. But
The friends that you confided in, that I'm presuming, or maybe I'm wrong too, that they weren't the ones you had crushes on.
No.
So, but were you talking about other crushes to them?
Yes.
And
then,
saying,
you know, there was
this
one.
Is the person I
there was
and
one.
It's a girl.
Yeah, exactly. There was one friend who I felt able to talk to that openly. It was tricky though, because she was sort of saying, "Oh, well, I once had a crush on a teacher," but I sort of knew it was different for her. I knew that she was essentially heterosexual. But you know, sexuality is fluid. It's confusing times when we're all teenagers. But yes, I used to at school kind of strategically change crush every sort of 6 months or so.
Oh, wow.
Quite consciously.
Yeah, I was going to say, it was a sort of date in your diary on the first of every month. It was like me writing my Desert Island Men down at the beginning of every month.
But
you were
like,
change crush, one down in the register, please. Was it like that?
A little bit.
Why was that? Out of just safety?
I think a personal survival tactic, because if I'd let it go too far with any one person and really kind of following them around like a, you know, a lost soul, and sort of knowing their timetable, which I did on occasion, and you sort of pop up, don't you? Like when I did have this crush on Kate at university, I did get to know her movements a bit, and I was a peer, a contemporary of the comedian Zoe Lyons at university.
Yes.
We both went to York University. And it turns out that lots of other people, including Zoe, had a crush on this same woman.
Oh,
she was one of those women that everybody liked. She'd had a year out travelling. She had this kind of poise that the rest of us, when we were 19, we were like, you know, we didn't have that. So she was quite compelling. And so,
I was just remembering there was a girl at my university who was known as Dream Babe. And I was sort of,
Dream Babe.
That's just insane, isn't it? I was just thinking of the number of people who were sort of going, oh, you know, Debbie. Oh, Dream Babe. Yeah, Dream Babe. And the pressure of that must have been really...
God.
Like, I wonder how aware of it
feel?
She was. Yeah, so bizarre, because I would assume it would be lovely, but maybe it wouldn't be. Maybe it would be a bit much.
I don't know. I'm not sure I even know what it's like. But then,
no,
you see, maybe people had crushes on me and I was completely unaware.
Oh, I'm sure they did. I'm sure they did. I think that there are... I think you're right that there tends to be a person that, you know, that somebody, that, you know, a group of people will be following around their patch of the library and whatever. But I think loads of them just won't come to light.
Yeah, and actually sometimes it comes to light much later, because there was
too late
a boy,
to do anything about
there was
it.
A boy who had a crush on me, even though I think I'd started to be latterly at university sort of more open about being gay, and he had a crush on me, and it turned out that after I'd left university, he had a poster of when I'd stood for president of the student union by dressing up as Kylie Minogue, and my slogan had been, "You should be so lucky."
I mean, it's very good. If we can get this for the Instagram account, I would love
that.
God. Do you still have one?
I must have a look. But Kylie... I mean, we'd have to get in touch with Richard. He's probably the most likely person to still have it.
I mean, if he's still got that up, that's upsetting.
That'd be amazing.
I hope he's moved on.
We are friends on Facebook, so...
Oh, there you go. So when did you find out about that, that he had a crush on you?
I wasn't fully aware when we were still at university together. And then I was, I think, a year above and so had left when my friend who was still at uni said, I think she was then sharing a house with Richard. And she was like, he's got your poster still on the wall.
So did she say anything to him?
I don't think so.
I think I would have to ask.
Yeah. But what was interesting...
Can I ask you how you felt about finding that out? Because obviously, for various reasons, you weren't really interested. But was it...
Well, I think it's validating. I think particularly if you're thinking or you're set in the role of thinking you're always the one who fancies people and nobody fancies you. So I think it can be validating. It doesn't matter what sex they are and if they're not, you know, the gender or sex that you typically feel romantically attracted to or have relationships with. I mean, sexuality is really fluid and complicated. Mm-hmm. I actually, you know, a lot of my early crushes were on men, although interestingly men that then later turned out to be gay. My first big one.
Oh, God, I love things like...
Yeah, it was like so you think, what? George Michael, I think, was my first big celeb crush.
Amazing.
I mean, he's just... Oh.
Yeah, no. I mean, yeah, totally with you. Well, I say with you. Weirdly, he was too masculine for me when I was younger. I mean, very active and so much hair and tan and teeth.
It was a lot.
A bit animal,
wasn't it?
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and he was really reinforcing his heterosexuality for many years, wasn't he?
When,
you know, that I Want Your Sex video kind of cavorting around with his girlfriend and writing in lipstick on her back and things like that. I mean, I used to joke that later on I thought, you know, I bet there was one take they took out where he wrote, I love cock. But yeah, no, I did love George. There was something about him and just his music and his voice. So I really adored George.
Yeah, that's his talent.
And I think, the only man for me.
Well, because I was going to say, like, I think there are times when, I mean, it's nice to find out about a crush ages later. Someone who's, you know, nice and normal, whatever. I suppose it might be different if you're like, oh my God, that guy. You
know, yeah,
so
that's
think
true.
Of him as a scary troll or whatever. Having a picture on your wall, that's not so.
I think it was okay. I think, yes, that was quite.
Yeah,
validating.
No, listen, I don't mean to be slagging poor man off.
Poor man.
He has excellent taste.
Yes. I think he's married now and very happy. Yeah. He's living in Australia, so. I mean, maybe I had to get far away from me
to recover.
But yeah, and what we're saying about when you learn someone's movements is that's sort of how I got to know Zoe a tiny bit at university.
Because
we were both bumping into our dream babe, and I'd be like, "Oh, Zoe, what are you doing? Kind of hiding behind this bin." and we were often trying to track her movements, and we both became involved briefly with a feminist newspaper that Kate and some feminist, called feminist friends, kind of set up at university. And I remember sort of when I first used to see them all hanging out together, you know, like, and Kate would have, she had Dr. Martens that she had painted a little Tippex flower on the side of.
Oh, God, I remember those.
Yes.
Yeah, they were always the coolest girls who did that.
And
mine were tartan, so you couldn't draw on them at all.
Oh, well, that was quite cool. And she would have her hair in a sort of side ponytail at the side, which was
a classic.
A thing then, wasn't it? And she would, so
and
I was.
Did you know her?
Like, well, not at first. Oh, yeah. Oh, God, I got to know her eventually.
Popping up from bins.
No, but at first I just used to, see her in the distance, you know, kind of ordering a vegetarian sausage or something in the canteen.
I mean, and you're really painting a very clear picture of this
good, one. Good, good. But then myself and Zoe and possibly several other people who were unrequitedly in love with Kate. This is how political movements often get started, isn't it? We all became interested in feminism, and we got involved with this paper that Kate had set up called Matrix, and I think that means womb.
And, does it?
Well, I think it can mean a sort of enclosure. It's not nothing to do with the film The Matrix. But anyway, she had started up this feminist newspaper, and one night she roped us in, and we were excited to be, Kate wanted some help, some volunteers with a project, and she wanted us all to do a sort of late night stunt where we were going to do some feminist graffiti in the middle of the night with green and purple paint, you know, the sort of suffragette colours, and we were going to do Sisterhood is Powerful on one of the university walls so that we could play innocent about it but just happen to take a photograph of it the next morning and go, oh, look at this powerful feminist graffiti. We must take a photo for our feminist newspaper. And so we were kind of creeping around in the middle of the night, and Zoe wasn't painting. I don't want to implicate her.
Zoe Lyons would not commit a crime.
She would not commit a crime. She was just keeping guard on her bike. So she was cycling up and down going, there's someone coming.
Oh, my God.
And so we were kind of painting The Sisterhood is Powerful. And it was all very exciting, although and we didn't get caught or anything. Although when we did come to take a photo of the slogan the next morning, Sisterhood is Powerful is actually a very long
slogan. Yeah, I was going to say, you need a panoramic camera.
Yeah, that's it. And we didn't have those in the 1990s. And so, yes, the photo that did end up on the front of Matrix, the perspective didn't really work so well, because rather than it be this bold statement, Sisterhood is Powerful, it sort of felt a bit like Sisterhood is... and it kind of faded away with
Sisterhood
the...
is perfect.
Yeah.
Did it impress her? Did it heart?
I think she was excited that we all got involved with the stunt. And so I got more involved with the newspaper, with helping out, putting it together, and started contributing little cartoons and articles. And eventually, when Kate and her friend Vic, who were the student union women's officers, they stood down as women's officers, I thought, I'm going to stand as her successor. I'm going to be on the student union I'm going to be the women's officer. But what was interesting was I think I'd slightly moved on from always trying to please Kate and impress her to starting to have my own ideas and my own sense of feminism. My God! And I sort of had a bit of a campaign around involving men in feminism, because I thought everybody needed to be involved.
It was the Emma Watson Him for Her, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. And so, but the Kate and her friends were more separatist than that at that time anyway. I mean, it's really interesting how many of them ended up marrying men. You know, that there was this trend back then of political lesbianism where you were sort of, you went out with women for a while because that was...
You should.
I know. It was so confusing to those of us who were really gay and thinking,
hold on, but I really fancy them.
What's going on?
So did you actually fall out with her?
No, not at all. Just... I think
she...
But is that how the crush ended?
To some extent, I think she
respected me. And but also, she did do something that hurt me, actually, because I was standing on my own against... Vonnie and Jude, who were two quite scary looking but lovely women who were involved with the Labour students group and were quite right on, but they weren't involved with the kind of women's group and the feminism and the Matrix lot. And funnily enough, a lot of people probably assumed them to be gay, whereas I was actually the one that was gay, because people have all these stereotypes about what lesbians look like, and Jude had very short hair and this kind of thing that was sort of bleached blonde. And everybody assumed that those two would win the election, right? And even Kate, because I went to the women's group to ask for their backing in this election. And they were like, oh, well, we're going to think about it. And, you know, I had to sort of go away and sort of come back to find out whether I was going to have this sort of official backing from I don't know, there's only about five or six women in the room. It's not some heaving political conference, you know. But they decided that they were not going to back me.
Oh, God.
And I was like, oh, okay. But you know what? I kind of campaigned and spoke to a lot of people about my take on feminism and went around knocking on doors and talking to students, and I won the election.
Hooray!
Yay. And that was kind of a moment. I mean, it's really nothing, isn't it? Silly student politics and stuff.
No. If I've learned anything on this podcast, is these absolutely tiny things can change everything. You know, the what people end up doing.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And I think I got some real sense of my own strength, but also the strength that I had got from the crush, I think,
yeah.
And how that had driven me to be interested in the world, in feminism and equality and what that meant. You know, we'd also, as part of this whole journey once, done a little stunt outside York Minster on Valentine's Day where we staged a same-sex wedding. And Kate had been marrying her then girlfriend. And
of course,
there was myself and Zoe and all these people who were in love with Kate. Just crying. And we were all sort of, you know, I don't know, handing out flowers or waving banners or shouting through megaphones or taking photos of it for the university paper and thinking, oh, God.
It should have been me.
Yeah, it should have been me. So it was a weird energy. But
yeah,
it was so interesting how I feel this crush kind of drove me to find my feet and find myself and find my voice a bit.
And I
think that's great.
No, absolutely. And then the crush is transcended because, you know, we often talk about this, about how the crush is actually always about the person having the crush. You know, often the person who is crushed upon has no idea it's happening. So it is about finding your identity and what comes from a spark, which is, you know, sexual or sometimes not even sexual.
Yeah.
You discover more stuff about yourself because of, you know, it turns out she was not the person you thought she was, but you didn't have exactly the same points of view of her. You weren't going to be subsumed by her and just be like, I'll just think everything that Kate thinks.
Yeah.
Mainly because that's not how you win anyone. That is not how it works.
So I think to some extent she had some respect for that.
Yeah. Do you think she knew that you had a crush on her and Zoe and these other bridesmaids from her
I think she kind of did. I think definitely she knew I did. Mm-hmm. I think we even ended up, I think once, did have some kind of conversation about it.
Can you remember how it went?
I'm trying to think. It was probably some kind of, you know, after a few drinks and we're all hanging out together after some kind of demo or march.
Yeah, you're all fired up.
Kind
as
of
it
reclaim
is, yeah.
the night or something.
Yeah.
And I probably said, "Oh, you know, I've always liked you," or something like that. And she was like, "Oh, Rosie," you know, it was just, you know, it was probably something like that. But she was, you know, she was not a horrible person.
No,
I mean,
no, because actually, that is the sort of thing that if you are a horrible person, or not even a horrible person, but just, you know, maybe not ethically as responsible as you might be, it would feel like quite easy to use that, wouldn't it? To sort of think, well, you know, the people who have crushes on me, I can use them for whatever.
To do my bidding.
Yeah,
you know?
Some
people do that, don't they?
Yeah, definitely.
Sort of
especially if they are
helpers.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. Well, especially if you have a cause, then it makes sense.
It's true.
It?
But also if you're a comedian and you need audience.
Well, same thing, I mean.
or a sound engineer.
Not a cult leader?
Edinburgh Fringe.
There's always stuff that you can get people to do for you.
I know, yeah. It's tricky, isn't it? Because you don't want to be that person, but then sometimes it's tempting, isn't it?
Of course. I know, I think if you do start a movement, I know, do you know Sunday Assembly?
I love Sunday Assembly.
And there's a sort of, so I know that that the people who started it, that one of them was single at the beginning of that. But that must have been really weird because, you know, but then you are sort of not a cult, but you're the leader of something. There is, like, there are grey areas there. If somebody finds you attractive, you're sort of thinking, oh, well, are you attracted to me because of the power?
Well, it is attractive, isn't it?
Well, that's the trouble. And I'm assuming that's how all the trouble starts in cults.
Indeed it is, isn't it? I mean, some of those charismatic leaders, they can be quite sexy, can't they?
Absolutely. And then end up sort of using it because it's just easy. I want to go back to your school, because I can see that Kate was incredibly influential, and you say that was, well, I'm interested in the fact that you said that was your first crush.
Yes.
Because presumably all these monthly ones in school, were they, did you allow yourself to indulge fantasies about them? I mean, I know you were kind of cutting them off.
It was really interesting. I think it was more... and I don't know if it was sexual at that stage. It was more really interested in those people and, you know, it sounds really sad, but actually really wanting to talk to them and be friends with them some places, just as much as it was to sort of maybe, I don't know, be close to them or even think about kissing somebody or something like that. But,
because I hate the phrase girl crush because it's just... useless and reductive and whatever. But I do think there's something interesting in the crushes. I've referred to them as waist-up crushes, where you just, especially when you're a teenager, it's not all about, you know, hormones. Or rather, it is about hormones, but it's not just about sex. You can really get obsessed with someone who you think, I think that's who I'd like to be, or that's the group I want to be in, and I can't be accepted by them. And I feel like that is... just as powerful, particularly in your young teens, whereas you say it's not necessarily sexual. It's not sort of, I just want to have my way with them.
You don't even... I mean, I also think when you're gay, particularly then, there are so few narratives about doing that or what you would even do with another girl, and you assume that all other girls are straight. You think that you're the only one who has these feelings, the only lesbian.
It breaks my heart.
I know.
Because it can't be true.
Well, of course it's not true, and I should have known, and, you know...
Well, no, you shouldn't have known, because as you say, everyone was doing their damnedest to make sure
I thought it was only Martina Navratilova.
And
God,
I
thought,
bless,
well,
Martina Navratilova
amazing,
as well. Because...
But I'm not that good at tennis, so maybe I'm...
How do I move in those circles?
I don't know. But then one time, and this is a bit sad, but I did, once my parents had gone out for the evening, and I was feeling so lost and confused and lonely about gayness, queerness, that I rang the Samaritans.
So how old were you?
This was like mid-teens. Mm-hmm. I think my sort of real anxiety and sadness and confusion about being gay probably peaked when I was about 17. Mm-hmm. So I think it was then. And the chap I spoke to actually tried to reassure me by telling me that Pat on EastEnders was also gay in real life.
So those are your choices. You've got Martina Navratilova or Pam St. Clement.
St. Clement.
Bye. Have a good life.
I thought, well, I'm not going to meet Pam St. Clement and her friends either. You know what?
No, that's not what a 17-year-old... I mean, she was quite an intimidating figure Pam St. Clement.
Yes, perhaps even more intimidating than Martina.
Agreed.
so I did feel scared about women or even thinking about how you would approach a gay woman or how you would know they were gay any of these kind of things.
I mean, that poor... I do feel a bit sorry for the man and the Samaritans. I suppose there are worse things he could have said, because I don't know how well trained they are.
I don't think they would have been back then.
No, quite. I mean, he could have been like, well, lesbians don't exist. Come on, what's wrong?
Exactly. Didn't
hang up on you.
Didn't you know Queen Victoria said?
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, God. So that's a whole
Queen Victoria, I heard a dating expert friend of mine say that it was really the men around her that perpetuated this myth that lesbians don't exist.
And oh, really?
Apparently, you know, more privately, Queen Victoria hadn't sort of quite as directly said that lesbians didn't exist. I know it is attributed to her, but I certainly heard doubt cast on whether it was actually her who said that or you know, people surrounding her.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, monarchs are basically sort of vessels, aren't they?
You know, exactly.
Talk about crushes. We attribute so much nonsense to them.
Yeah.
Whereas you're right, I'm sure that there'll have been all sorts of hovering ministers and hangers-on saying, no, this is what you believe.
Yeah.
This is the easiest thing to believe.
I think it's interesting we're talking about non-sexual crushes because I think there was one of my early ones at school where maybe it did feel a bit more physical and that was quite scary and a bit more, ooh, who's that?
Thrilling.
What it was I think that year that I was 17 in the lower sixth form at school, we put on an entertainments evening at school and we had a French theme one year. And so myself and some of my friends were putting on an Aloha Low sketch.
Perfect.
Rather awkwardly, the biology teacher turned out in later years to have been fooling around and being not perhaps very ethical, shall we say. And he was playing René.
Oh, God.
Oh, crikey. I know. Oh, heck. We'd hit on something nerve without knowing.
Was this all his idea?
And
no,
so
I'll snuck these girls.
We were, yeah, I know. So we were doing this Aloha sketch and we were doing the rehearsals one day and this girl a year younger, and it felt a bit pervy. She was a year younger. I mean, it's really nothing, isn't
no,
it?
No,
when
I know,
you're 17
days,
and 16 or
well, you know, George Harrison is the school year below Paul McCartney.
Oh.
And apparently they just never lost that relationship. They just never lost
that sort of
slightly
power
junior.
Dynamic. Oh. Yeah. And so anyway, this girl came on and she started singing Chanson d'amour.
Well.
And in a sort of little French maid's outfit.
Oh, good Lord.
With a little sort of, you know, frilly apron and a little black skirt. And I was like, oh, my goodness.
Oh, hang on.
Who's that? And I thought, oh, no. That I think that was the real moment. I thought, gosh, you know, my crushes on girls are definitely different to my friend's crushes on a teacher because she was impressed by her brain and all that kind of thing. It definitely engaged something more physical and animal.
And was your reaction of, oh, God, about the queerness?
Yeah,
rather than,
I think
I'm sexual, which can be frightening
as well.
Yeah.
Well, yes, I'd been trying to be sexual.
Haven't we all?
with boys and just not. I mean, I was going to say not working, but that's not true. Actually, there were some boys I got off with and it was fun.
It did,
and there was one boy, Mark, who I kept going back to because we really got on and we did have a chemistry.
Yeah.
You know, so.
But it wasn't the same.
It wasn't the same emotional intensity.
Yeah.
I think sexually, for me anyway, and I certainly am not speaking for all queer women. I know gold star lesbians who are like, oh my God, I would never sleep with a man. I could not go there. But for me, and certainly my wife as well, we've had boyfriends, you know, and that was quite fun and of its time and part of our journey and development.
Yeah. But you didn't have a crush. Did you have a crush on any boy or was it like...
Only George. Only George Michael.
Okay.
Which is a different sort of colour and texture, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, so when was the George Michael crush? Like, how long did
it... That was probably earlier teens, really,
okay.
When they were...
And did you imagine kissing him? Not really.
No, I don't think so, because that seems so unlikely, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, another thing I've talked about in one of my shows is couples who have a celebrity fantasy shag list.
Yeah.
You know, if people, if you met them and they were up for it,
you're allowed. Yeah.
But it just seems ridiculous, doesn't it? Because when are you going to meet these people? But having
said
that...
Well, you say that.
I know. Well, I know I've heard a story about a gay guy who... a very famous film star who is often rumoured to be gay, mm-hmm. happened to be in this club where this guy was, and the bodyguards with this famous film star said to him, oh, you know, he would like you to come home with him. And this guy was like, oh, no, I'm in a relationship. I can't. But later on, he told his boyfriend about this. And his boyfriend was like, oh, God, for him, it would have been fine. He was like, oh, my God.
It's too late. But it's funny, isn't it? Because he sort of says, oh, for him, it would have been fine. But I wonder whether it would have been. It's about hubris, isn't it? Where you sort of think it would be all right.
That
oh,
would be
come
fine.
On, that would be, you know, that would be an amazing story. And then the actual reality is not.
I know. And I think you can have those conversations with your partner where you think, yes, that would be fine. But
but would it? I mean, it might be, but you just don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so. So, yeah, I think, boys wise, it was
just
really
George.
And then, you know, I was just kind of fooling around with boys because that was what everyone.
Yeah.
That was what everyone was doing.
Well, it's interesting that you call it fun. That just seems very. And actually, I sort of feel quite jealous because I feel like that's definitely what I missed out on was the sort of fun element of it. I think I took it all very, very seriously from early on. Like I was almost looking for marriage from the age of 14. You know, it was it's not marriage, but like if you were going to get a boyfriend, it would be because you were, you know, you were very meant to be and whatever. And if I did choose to fancy someone, I would then really commit everything to that thought, you know, not do anything about it, but be like, yes, I think, oh, look at all of these signs that are about us being together sort of thing. And I did feel a real, and my friends tended to be sort of similar. I had a friend who was always going out with someone, but it would be for like a year or two. It was huge. I never was one of those girls who was just like, yeah, we just go to the park on Saturday and snog whoever's there.
It just
never felt like something I could do. Even if I occasionally would be approximately chatted up, I would be moving away as he was, as he was talking. Yeah, yeah, I just couldn't understand the fun element of it.
Oh, yeah, so it's interesting. I think I was quite attractive to boys in that way because I was a bit offhand and non-committal
relaxed
about it all. So I
didn't have me lunging at them and asking them questions about their priorities.
Asking if you could meet their parents on the first date. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. Oh, yeah, that's interesting. One thing that I did want to maybe talk about as well is I talked about doing kind of weird and extraordinary things to try and get the attention of your crush.
Mm.
And one thing I've just remembered is that I did to perhaps one of the bizarre and sillier things I did to try and get Kate's attention, maybe when I was getting a bit frustrated that it wasn't really all working out or going anywhere at all. And, you know, even when I'd sort of become woman's officer, you know, I'd probably slightly annoyed her by, you know, my ideas being slightly different. So I decided to go for it. And every year in the summer term at the end of the year, Derwent College, which was sort of slightly the kind of wanky college where all the people who'd been rejected by Oxbridge went, they would have this Derwent barbecue, which was sort of had this air of exclusivity that the tickets were really expensive. It was probably one of the most expensive events you could have on campus. And they would have bands playing. God knows who it was back then. I remember one time we all went to see Delamitri.
Oh, that's not that bad.
They were quite nice, weren't they?
Doctor and the Medics, which is, they only had the one song, really.
And so they would have a band playing and food and stuff. And so what would happen is every year somebody would sort of go down in university folklore because they gate-crashed Derwent Barbecue.
Oh, brilliant, yeah.
And so I decided, I cooked up a plan with my lab partner, Martin, who we used to do boring kind of lab work together and really hate it. And we hated it. We were doing an engineering degree. We really hated it. And so he cooked up this plan with me. He was like, every year someone gate crashes and, you know, you should do it, Rosie. And he was kind of really egging me on.
Yeah, yeah.
And he cooked up this sort of plan. He had these waders and that he was convinced there was a sort of ledge around the edge of the lake and I could sort of wade around edge of the lake, this sort of goose shit infested lake, and somehow I would be able to discreetly, even though I was sort of covered in, you know, goose shit and dirty lake water.
Oh my God.
Somehow
and were you
discreetly
in black
tie? Just climb
Did you have
to,
like,
up
wear a ball gown or
Well, no, I wasn't wearing a ball gown. I think I was just wearing, obviously, kind of scruffy stuff that I didn't mind getting all soaked and horrible.
And I have the Black Lagoon.
I know,
this party.
It's ridiculous, really, isn't it? And so Martin, but I thought, oh, brilliant, you know, because I will get a bit of attention and Kate will notice this stunt because I think she was, you know, going to be at the barbecue and stuff. Because she was at all the sort of cool things, you know.
Because everyone was in love with her.
I know, that's the thing. Someone probably bought her a ticket or invited her there, you know, popped on the guest list if we had such things then. And so I decided that, yeah, Martin was going to help me gatecrash. And so he kind of lowered me into the lake, you know, at this point where we thought there was a sort of ledge. And I was wearing his gigantic...
When you say at this point we thought there was a ledge, did he not know? So he's just persuaded
you to do that.
It was a bit
of a shady plan, wasn't it?
And then in his head there's a ledge.
I know. Anyway, there was a ledge for about, you know, 2 centimetres.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, oh, no, there's no more ledge. And the waders were massive and too big for me because they, you know, belonged to this huge hoofing lad. And they started filling up with water. I thought, I'm just going to drown.
Oh, my God. I'm the embarrassment of dying like for your crush.
Down into the gloom. And I haven't even kissed a girl. I haven't even authentically been myself.
This is your thoughts as your boots were filling up.
It can't end here.
Flashing before your eyes. This is horrendous.
So what I did was I had a moment where I thought, I'm going to have to kick these waders off, you know. Sorry, Martin.
And so, well, it's all Martin's fault, frankly.
Well, I know.
Him and his ledge.
I know, exactly. And so I sort of kicked these waders off and they kind of fell to the bottom of the lake,
God,
along with all
drama.
Kind of detritus and dead bodies. Who knows? The other people who tried to get crash the barbecue. And so, I then thought, well, I'm just going to have to start swimming, which isn't as discreet as sort of
not really
tiptoeing around a ledge around the side of the lake.
No, probably none of the other guests arrived like that.
I started kind of doing as discreet as possible breaststroke.
The subtlest of the strokes.
Well, you're not going to do front crawl, are you?
Oh, or butterfly,
Or even, you know, front crawl, backstroke. That you couldn't see where you were going.
No,
you
wouldn't see when you that would all
arrived
be
at the bank. And anyway, so of course, what happened is people all started flooding out of the building to see me approaching.
Oh my
God! But I thought, well, this in a way is quite exciting.
Amazing. Yeah,
you know, I have got people's attention, and so of course, when I sort of ran up the bank and kind of ran around for a little moment, going, "Hey, I got in," I was eventually sort of escorted away.
How mean!
I know. So
how mean! You should have told that story and said, "And I'm here to live my authentic self now.
Yes.
I'd like to kiss a girl as a reward for going through."
I know.
Kate should have been your prize.
I should have marched up to Kate, shouldn't I?
I mean, that's
kind of stinking with dirty lake water.
Yeah.
And said, look what I did for you.
Whereas probably in reality she didn't ever know you were there. Or...
Oh, no. I like to think she was one of the people watching.
Yeah,
and
presumably.
Sort of going, oh, my God, what's she doing?
Well, you're a legend after that. I mean, I think that's brilliant.
I think it was just a bit of a joke that I don't know. Some people, I don't think, you know, as many people kind of knew about it. I mean, Martin
had
really built up.
You should have put it on your posters.
Oh, yes, I should. I might have won the election then, although then I would have had to have stayed on at York University for another year doing a kind of boring job, you know, actually running the student union. Who wants that? I, again, of course, was just standing for election for more attention. As
well,
we do.
I mean, yeah, exactly. Hence becoming a stand-up comedian.
I know.
You've lost all of your principles and your activism and just gone for the attention.
Well, I mean, I like to think that in my in my shows and books, there's a sense of, you know, being out and proud as a queer woman and also helping other people to process breakups and relationships and how confusing and complicated it is, and helping them to sort of own their narrative about all that weird journey. So I hope that there's some principle or
you tell yourself
sense
that.
some sense of good. Well,
no, you're absolutely right. I'm teasing. I think it is. It's definitely. You're definitely on the side of good, and you're definitely helping people.
Let's hope.
Right, I think it's time to do the maths, do the science.
Oh, yes.
Did you have this? Do you remember this LOVES? So it's Rosie Wilby.
Yes.
Loves Kate. Do you want to say her surname? Or?
Oh, yeah, it's fine. She we're friends on
She'll
Facebook,
know.
And she. I
mean,
she
to
knows
be honest,
it.
It's been very flattering.
I know.
Would love to have,
I've not been horrible.
I'd send her this,
been
this
live.
Podcast.
You know, I send her directly. You'll look her up now. So her surname is Allport. A-L-L. And then P-O-R-T.
This is good.
Oh, couple L's. Is that good?
Yeah, yeah, it should be.
Oh, wow. Okay, brilliant.
Three. Oh, no, hang on. Oh. No V's. No V's.
Oh.
Two E's.
I don't remember doing this.
I think it must have been... Yeah, it doesn't seem to have travelled everywhere, which is weird because it really is so accurate. Oh, it's very good.
Is it good?
It's 88%.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's really good. Well,
later on, do it for your wife as well, and just to check things out. And do you know if Kate's with someone?
Well, the last I knew, she was happily married to a man. So,
okay.
I'm not sort of holding out any sort of old... hopes. The flame is not
wife,
really
though,
still burning.
Just in case.
I should. Yeah, well, it's weird, the percentages thing. It reminds me of when I used to do internet dating. There's a certain website that would send you your list of ideal matches.
Oh, yeah.
And it had a weird glitch and only sent my own back to me, which was clearly a mistake. I mean, clearly it was a technical
error. No, I love this.
It sent my own back to me. But it still, it only calculated I was a 73% match.
Well, that is fantastic. So your perfect date is you. But
Well, no, Kate's even better,
no,
right?
No, you're right.
She's 88%,
88.
Which is better than 73.
Okay. Well, I'm glad to have been so helpful. Thank you so much
thank
for talking
you.
To me.
Thank you, Margaret.
Rosie will be.
Crushed by Margaret Caborn-Smith was hosted by Margaret Caborn-Smith and produced by Sophie Black. Thanks to everyone at the amazing TVC Soho. And if you enjoy the podcast, please remember to like and subscribe as it helps people find where we are.